Good morning, everybody. I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be live and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank all of you for being here, and Bart and Sal for allowing Chris and I to be here. And thank Chris for his first session, his sharing. It's a real treat for me to be here. I'm glad the air conditioners worked this morning. I'm looking for a fireplace to talk in front of. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I'm very grateful for that. And if you knew me when I was drinking, you'd be grateful too. But because of the power I found in Alcoholics Anonymous and have had an experience with and continue to have an experience with this power of infinite mercy and infinite love, my life gets reborn and resurrected each time I revisit this work, each time I have a new experience in 10-11, each time I sit down with another alcoholic. I have a new experience each time I wake up every morning because it's a new moment. I have a new experience with God every breath I take because it's a new breath. When I go to work, when I'm in a relationship, when I'm taking care of children, when I'm taking care of my pets, when I'm out at the grocery store shopping, I walk with this power. Because what I found out little by slowly is that there is no more duality in our life. See, most of us come here and we're in fellowship, and here's fellowship, and there's program, and somewhere there's service, and I'm fellowshipping, now I'm doing service. You know, you're here. It's a great fellowship outing, and fellowship so we can act like drunks without drinks in us. Then I come to an AA meeting, talk about the steps, and I become a guru. And then in service, I do when I have time. Right? And we separate the three. But as we wake up and experience oneness with this power, there is no more duality. Fellowship becomes service. Service becomes fellowship. It all becomes one. We become part of the whole. And when I'm tending to the children, out at the grocery store, or being with the loved one, or whatever I'm doing, doing a talk, working with another drunk, I move from moment to moment to moment with spirit. And when I'm awake, who I be is manifested in thought, word, and deed. And when I'm untreated, it will manifest in thought, word, and deed. I'm grateful for presence. I'm grateful for breath. Last night we talked about, I had mentioned if we want to get free, get freer. If we're not experiencing current bondage, do we want to get past that? Do I want to experience a new level of consciousness I've ever never experienced before? A new experience with this power called God. And what we quickly do is think, well, this new level of consciousness, this new awareness with God, walking around consciousness without thought, no thought life involved, but truly present with this power, no separation, no duality of what that's going to look like. You know, I want what you have to offer, so I think it's going to look like what you got. And very rarely does it resemble the sponsor's recovery or someone else's recovery, because God has these separate journeys for each and every one of us. And what we quickly do is get attached to the outcome, how this is supposed to look, how it's supposed to feel, how I'm supposed to sound. And as we move to this work, the great remover, we start to lose that, which is a great thing. And we become very present to the moment without judgments, without trying to interpret, but just present, consciousness without thought. And wherever God moves me, He moves me, and it's glorious wherever I land. My thinking mind says, well, my recovered life should be the new car, that house with the white picket fence, the ideal spouse, 2.5 kids, the whole deal. I should be making this much money, and everyone's going to worship me when I walk into an AA meeting. And then God says, no, I need you at the Salvation Army this weekend. That's why a book uses the word pause. In the 11th step, anytime I'm pausing, if it's not to seek counsel, and sometimes even when I need to seek counsel, it's because I got in the way again. Ego showed up again. That's why I'm pausing. Because it goes like this. I'm going to go to that meeting on Park Avenue tonight. It's a Saturday night meeting, 8 o'clock start. The women look great. The men are all dressed. It's going to be a nice meeting. I'm going to go out afterwards. So I'm going to get dressed to the nines and go be spiritual for an hour. All right. And then the little nudge says, the Bowery needs someone to go down and work with some drunks. Go down there. And suddenly I have to pause. But I don't want to go there. I want to go uptown, right? And then I have this dilemma, this conflict going on. The conflict is self and spirit. Last night I said that the mind will contradict spirit and the spirit will contradict mind. We pause and we seek counsel. Should I go to that meeting up there and meet someone, or should I go down there and meet some new drunks? And we know where we need to be. There's a couple of things I wanted to talk about before we move into some of the work. I'm just going to kind of fill in a couple of spots that Chris hit. What this work will do for us is remove, as we talked about last night, all the obstacles in my path to experience God. Starting with step one, where it comes to a surrender. A concession deep down in here that I'm a real alcoholic. And that's just the beginning, because after we make that admission and surrender to that first step where, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, I have no power, choice, control, I'm really clear on what's going to happen to me, I don't know where I'm going to land, but I need to get help now. And whatever the help may be, I'm willing to go to any lengths. I'm going to seek it with the desperation of a drowning man. And then we begin. And we look at a power greater than ourselves, make a decision to get there, et cetera. And Chris talked about step four. And we get to look, take stock of oneself. Not you, but I take stock of me. I'm not looking at your defects of character. I'm looking at mine at 6 and 7. They get removed. And as we move through 9, they further get removed. And we start to wake up. It's removal. And really simply what happens, and I'll put this out there to someone who's never done the work. Although we are experiencing the death of self and it feels like we're dying, oh my God, they're taking me and dismantling me. Well, that's exactly what's happened, but that's a great thing, because in that leveling, we get reborn. We get resurrected. And what happens to us, very simply, is we, in a sense, go home. We're going home with this work. And spiritual warriors will embrace that. We'll go through that change, because there's greater pain in not changing than the change itself. We go home through this work. We're going home to our Creator who put us here in the first place. Perfect. And over the years, we show up here and we start to accumulate things. Belief systems, resentments, fears, things that are given to us, and we walk with them. And our whole way of going about this journey is based on what the thinking mind has accumulated and tells me to do, and that's how I operate. Don't trust those people. Don't trust those people. Those people okay. Dress this way. Don't like them. Sound like this. Do this. Go here. Don't date her. Date. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Most of us find when the smoke clears, we had a wonderful life and we destroyed it. I was sharing with someone last night. Last night I was missing my home a whole lot. I mean, I was just, and I'm not too far. I'm an hour away from home. It felt like I was in Europe last night. I was just feeling very far away from home. And I travel a lot. And when I'm away from home, it's really clear to me how much I love my home. Little things like going to the grocery store seem sacred all of a sudden, because I never had it so good. And I got real clear on that. A few times going through the work, I got real clear on how blessed and sacred my life is. That waking up in the morning and getting a newspaper, pouring a cup of coffee and going to the grocery store and getting to do a good day's work is glorious. Because there's no duality. I go to work with God. I get the paper with God. I have my cup of coffee with God. We go home. That's what this work does. It takes us home. I had to get real clear on this. No matter how long God keeps me sober, no matter how old I am, no matter how many things I've accumulated over the years, what kind of reputation I've accumulated or I think I have accumulated, no matter what kind of external conditions, what my external conditions look like, in the eyes of my Heavenly Father, I'll always be a child. And ego doesn't want to hear things like that. But how comforting that is, that I can turn as a student to the teacher, or as a child to his father, and ask for direction and be with that power. Be. Now, it didn't look like that when I got here in 1988. When you talked to me about a God personal to you, I figured you belonged to a cult. When you told me a God loves me, I says, yeah, maybe you, but not me. God could and would if he was sought. That works for you. It doesn't work for me. And I would more than bristle with antagonism when we talked about God. And then what I find out is this, that this message, this AA big book is aimed directly at spirit in order for me to experience God. My book is not aimed at a thinking mind. It's aimed right at spirit. And I was looking at what an order. I can't go through with it. But what were my alternatives? Find a spiritual basis of life or else. And I knew what the or else meant. Another Mr. Boston Blackberry brandy and drink to oblivion. And if I'm lucky, I land in another treatment center. So the question we ask ourselves is, my recovery based in abstinence or is my recovery based in spirit? If it's based in abstinence, then you don't need to be here this weekend. If it's based in abstinence, you put the plug in a jug, don't drink, go to meetings, join sober softball team, make lots of coffee, go AA bowling team, right? AA dances. That's your recovery. Abstinence. I'm not drinking. My name is Pete. I'm an alcoholic. I beat up my wife. I cheat on my wife. Cheat on my tax. I haven't shown up for work in 3 weeks, but I'm going to pick up a drink today, so I'm a winner. That's recovery based in abstinence because I really don't care. And bless them. Recovery is based in spirit. We go to some of the greatest lengths, any lengths, in order to recover and continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness because it's vital to me. Life-giving when I do and life-threatening when I don't. My life is based on my relationship with this power called God, and we get real clear on that. We get cornered in step one. And if my recovery is based in spirit, it kind of separates us from some of our contemporary AA. Because if we walk into an AA meeting and think everyone's a real alcoholic, we're delusional. Because a lot of us aren't. Maybe some here this morning. Maybe some are not sure, and we'll find out their truth. But most of our AA meetings are not filled with every seat as a real alcoholic. And you could hear the different brands of recovery, the different brands to stay away from a drink. I just think the drink through. And I haven't picked up a drink. Or it got really bad for me out there. I had a few DWIs, a handful of car crashes, even did a detox. And I made a decision. I got to put the plug in a jug and I came to AA and life's been great. I did all of that stuff and still kept drinking. And God in his infinite mercy said, enough, June 23rd, 1988, enough. Now I separate you because I have other work for you to do. That's the real alcoholic. I experienced a phenomenon called craving. It was intensified every time I put a drink in me. Never satisfied. And my mind would take me back to it over and over and over again. No matter what kind of desire I had to stay away from it. Can't drink anymore. Pete, you're not going to drink no matter what. We're not going to drink. You know what happens to us. I had that much clarity. And somewhere, Chris talked about it, like somewhere in the middle of the day, well, let's rethink this. Or I haven't had a drink in a week, so let's get going. My mind would not give me the consequences that were going to follow. And if they did, they were hazy and ready to supplant it with the old threadbare idea, you know what, one or two won't hurt. It'll be okay. That's lack of power, which we touched on last night. Lack of power is our dilemma. For me, the most profound words in my big book is lack of power. That is my dilemma. With power, no dilemma. I lack power, which means I lack choice and control. This is step one. Even after I conceded to my innermost self, even if I perhaps walked through the doctor's opinion and identified with the mental obsession, identified with the phenomenon called craving, I still lack power. I've just acquired some knowledge, and knowledge will not work. Knowledge alone will not work. Any fool can pick up this big book and memorize it and get to a podium and sound really profound and then pick up a drink when the talk is done. All right? But our book uses the word combined knowledge and experience. And what I offer you this weekend is this. Seek experience. Seek experience. Knowledge will follow. That's part of the package. Anyone who sits down and studies this book will acquire knowledge. Don't seek knowledge. Seek experience with this power because it cannot be understood. But certainly be an experience. Experience this book. This book will take me to God. Seek experience. Because when we're having an experience with this power of God, there is no room for thinking about drink, because God's got work for us to do. Go out and work with others. I have no time to occupy your mind with drinking. See, I can hear right away who's in an experience with God and who isn't, because they talk about the drink signals and the drink issues, and they can't go where drinking is served. And I challenge that, well, what kind of God do you have? How do you do a 12-step call if you still have drink signals and thinking about a drink? I can't go to a wedding because there's drinking served. Well, what if God calls you to go do a 12-step call and you walk in and that drunk's got a pint of vodka in front of him? What are you going to do? Should I save him or take the drink? Right? You go on a 12-step call with Joe and say, Joe, I'm thinking about drinking. That pint looks good. Now Joe's got two to make. See, but God moves me to a safe of a place of neutrality, safe and protected. And I don't have to do anything other than work the first nine proposals. I'm in this place where I'm immune, if you will, from this booze. I'm safe and protected in a position of neutrality. I'm not running away from it. I'm not drawn to it. There's booze. Here's me. What else is going on? Oh, we got a drunk to work with. You know how many 12-step calls I've done and gotten the bottle and dumped it or tossed it in the trash? Nothing going on. Not like, well, see ya, maybe another time. None of that romanticizing. None of that euphoric recall. In fact, I didn't even hate it. There's booze, not good for him. It's going down a tube. We're getting you to a detox. Next. How could I work with a drunk if I'm still stuck in triggers and issues when I'm hearing that drunk story and he's telling me about all his drinking escapades? Because if I'm listening to that and I got drink, if I'm thinking about a drink, if I'm still attached, every escapade, no matter how sick it sounds, you know us, that wasn't too bad. It sounded like good time. Maybe I'm making a mistake going to AA. Right? Yeah. Is my recovery based in abstinence or in spirit? We go over to page 34 for a moment. Here's where a lot of our meetings get split right down the middle. Page 34, about the second paragraph, it says, for those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether or forever, okay? Altogether, forever. Dr. Bob said, quit drinking for good and all. God doesn't wear a watch and doesn't use a calendar. When I'm integrated with this power, it's presence. We live a day at a time. I live it a day at a time. That's my human condition. That's how God put me in, these 24-hour clips. But with presence, there's no attachments to, I got 3,244 days and going on 45 days. That's a horrible way to live. Right? We're just present, sober, recovered, moving. For good and all. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. And the question I ask a prospect, do you still have a desire to stop? Are you clear on what brought you here? And here it is. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he or she has already lost the power to choose whether they will drink or not. What my book just told me, if I have the power of choice, I may not need a spiritual basis of living. I may want it, but I may not need it. And if I've lost power, choice, and control, then I need to find a spiritual way of living or else. I mean, my book is really clear. In fact, I'll be honest, I always felt at this point my book is even being delicate with us. It's either find God or drink and die. I mean, that's what it comes down to, spiritual life and spiritual death. If I've gotten clear on that, this is spiritual life or spiritual death. And when I say spiritual life, I'm not talking about, you know, being a guru or leading groups or anything like that. Spiritual life, carrying a vision of God's will into all my activities, not just when AA is watching, right? Not when it's convenient. Carrying a vision of God's will into all my activities looks like this now. Purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. Oxford stuff. That's what I was moved to do. And God raised the bar on me, and I wasn't too thrilled about that, but he did. Okay. It says many of us felt we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease, to stop forever. But we found it impossible. That's lack of power, choice, or control. I want to stop. I want to put this away. I want to turn the page. I want to have a new life. Alcohol is killing me and everyone around me. I want to stop, and we can't. I'm in the treatment center business. I speak to many families about the husband, the wife, the children. I don't understand. Doesn't he or she know what they're doing to us? They're weak. It goes on and on and on. The sad thing is when I tell them, they know exactly what they're doing to you. And they want to stop. And they can't. That's alcoholism. And sometimes we get real comfortable in AA. Lives get together as they ought to. They get reassembled. And we get comfortable as we ought to be and experience some PCs and comfort in Alcoholics Anonymous. But we forget the real deal. I'm telling someone, I got a call. I don't know, it must have been around 1 o'clock this morning. Guy calls me up. Didn't even say, Pete, I'm sorry to say, he just went right into, you know, how newcomers, they go right into it, you know. Hello, I got a resentment. She did this, and it's like 2:30 in the morning. Well, who is this? You know? And a guy was telling me he was trying to do this 12-step call on this young lady who came to my home group Thursday, and she was home and tried to get her to a detox and didn't want to go. And, you know, she was oblivious to all of this, and this guy on the phone knew the serious trouble she was in. And we talked about it. I let him know there's a part of her that wants to stop. That's why she came to an AA meeting on Thursday. But she can't. Going to a detox or a treatment center doesn't make me immune to alcohol. If I get shot with a bullet and the bullet wound heals, I'm not immune to getting shot anymore, right? Going to AA doesn't make me immune to alcoholism. It just gives me an opportunity to find a place to recover from alcoholism. It says, this is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Page 35. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? All action is born in thought. My drinking starts with a thinking mind. That takes me back to the drink, then the phenomenon called craving kicks in, and it stops when it wants me to. And the only remedy for that is God. The only remedy for any area of my life is God. We have some stories on a book about a guy named Ed, a guy named Jim, and a guy named Fred, and I sponsor a guy named Ed, a guy named Jim, and a guy named Fred. God, like, this has shown all his mercy on me yet, I don't know. Let's go to page 42 for a minute. More about alcoholism has been talking about the mind over and over and over again. And we get presented with step one with the doctor's opinion. We learn about Bill in the first 9 pages. We learn more about the thinking mind, chapter 3, more about alcoholism. Like, if you didn't get it yet, we're going to talk more about it, right? More about alcoholism. And after all of that, we come to page 42, and there's a great line in there. It says, he reads, as this process snuffed out the last flickering conviction, I can do the job myself. As I'm sitting going through up to page 42, has this work thus far snuffed out the last flicker of conviction in me that I can do this on my own? That somehow, some way, I'll be immune to alcohol, that I'll be able to beat the game. Or am I at a place, flip right across the page to 43, where it says, I'm 100% hopeless apart from divine help? Am I in that place? Because that's a great place to be, feeling 100% hopeless from divine help when we're in step one. Because the only way to go at this point is to find God. Lack of power is my dilemma. That's another way of saying 100% hopeless from divine help. We come to step two in chapter to agnostics, and I shared this last night, where when we talk about God, we feel the difficulties rise in an alcoholic. The tension gets brought to a new level. And it's real clear, do I want to be taken past here, where I currently am? Where I currently am, do I want to go past here? Whether in a grip of the grapes looking to get free or around Alcoholics Anonymous a little while and looking to get past where we currently are. The difficulty and tension is not with God. It's with me, with God. Based on my old belief systems. My contempt prior to investigation about this power called God. And one of the most powerful chapters in our book is chapter to Ignatius, because they blow the doors wide open on how to experience with God. They don't care what you're coming in with, what kind of tempt, what kind of contempt you have, what kind of religious ideologies. They lay it out for anyone to grasp this. On page 45. It says, lack of power is my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than me. Where and how was I going to find this power? Chapter to the Agnostics will tell us how to find a higher power, where to find this power, and even why I should find this power. And it lays it out for us, wide open. It says that's what this book is about. Its main object is to enable me and you to find a power greater than ourselves which will solve our problems. So they're not even talking about drinking anymore. They're talking about solving our problem. This book will enable us. I was doing a talk one time on step 6 and 7, and a woman said from the floor, you know, it's easy for you to talk about God and your experience with God. You're up there and I'm sitting here and I've been relapsing forever, and she went on and on and on. So I can't find God no matter what I do. And I told her, well, first things first, God's not lost. Yeah. I get lost all the time. My friends know this. God's not lost. And I opened up the book and I took it to page 45. And I read to her that this book, this big book, will enable me, will help you, will help us find the power greater than ourselves which will solve my problem. This book is the vehicle to take me to this power called God. And when I stop looking out there for external remedies and come back to the book and realize it's an internal reorganization that I need, a spiritual revolution, and this book will show me how to do that, I will stop searching out there and get busy with this book, with the teacher who's awake, and experience God. And I share that with her. And then she got angry with me. Okay. It says, that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. It means we're going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. And we talked about that difficulty arising with agnostics. Even arises when we're at currently, when we experience agnosticism in Alcoholics Anonymous, sober, years. We get that current agnosticism, and someone says to us, well, you better find God, you better experience God, and we want to knock their head off the shoulder because my ego is looking for a different answer. Well, if I was in your shoes, I'd be feeling that way too. That's what the ego wants to hear, to justify inappropriate behavior that's now manifesting in my life. Until we speak to someone who's awake and says, when was the last time you went through to work? Where are you at amends? What's your current prayer meditative life look like? What's 10 and 11 look like? And we pause on every one of those. That means we're in trouble, right? Because we're not doing it. That's what a good teacher will do. When people come to me, it's really bad for me. I'm experiencing this and life's unmanageable. I get fear all over. Well, when was the last time you went through the work? What's 10 and 11 look like? How current are you with amends? By the way, do you have a sponsor? Because you're calling me with this. Right? Well, I have some guys I talk to. That's not the question. Do you have a sponsor? Okay. See, ego will justify all inappropriate behavior and look for a false sense of self in external conditions. Now, I go to a meeting a week, my life's falling apart, but I just bought a new Cadillac, so I'm good. Right? False sense of self in that stuff. And that works till we get the first car payment, and that don't work anymore. All right. I'm in a relationship. She's wonderful. Everything's going. I feel so good. She's everything I dreamt about. And then you have your first fight. I hate her. I got to get rid of her. Right. And women, you do the same thing about us. So it's not. This week I'm in love. Next week I don't know. Okay. I did it too. Okay, so we're coming to step two, and it's our point to define this power, that we're going to come to believe in a power greater than ourselves. We're going to get to this place, this arrival place of this power doing for us what we can never do for ourselves, and that's giving me wholeness of mind, restoring me to sanity. If I'm being restored to sanity, and in step 10, that promise, that contract is delivered, that sanity will have returned, sanity, wholeness of mind, I'm not thinking about a drink. And I will challenge any AA who says it's normal to think about a drink because you're an alcoholic, perhaps, but don't give a broad stroke across all of Alcoholics Anonymous and say that's the theme of AA, thinking about a drink is normal in Alcoholics Anonymous, because me and countless others will challenge that. Being restored to sanity, I will tell you, I haven't had a thought about a drink in a very, very long time. And I've been around drunks, wet ones. I've been around drinking situations. I've gone to parties. I've gone to weddings. You name it, I've been there. I've been where a guy's had the powder on a table, the vodka next to it, and got him out of there untouched. And my mind didn't say, remember those days? That would be nice. Maybe just one. None of that. I haven't drank over sorrows, and I have many challenges in Alcoholics Anonymous on this journey, and I haven't drank over joys, and I've had many of them in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not once been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. That'll ruffle feathers in contemporary AA. They don't like when I say things like that. Tough. Because I'm not going to deny the glory of God, what he can do for us. What a promise we give to a drunk who's here this weekend new, and I can tell them, I promise you, you'll get to a place that drinking will be removed and you'll never think about a drink again. I'll go out and say that you'll never pick up a drink again if you're in an experience with God. Your last drink is done. Quit drinking for good and all. That's what we ought to be talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not just put the plug in a jug stuff, make 90 meetings in 90 days. Like that somehow replaces God. When did that start? A book says we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. And how many of us play God when we tell a newcomer who's walking in here in a state of obsession, just coming off a drunk, hey, kid, make 90 meetings in 90 days. Like we know they're going to make 90 meetings in 90 days without picking up a drink. Who's playing God then? Rather than saying, sit down with me, I have a solution for you. It works. It's called the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll walk you through because I've had an experience with it. I've had many. And I will take you, I will walk you to have your own experience and you'll get free and don't grab the next one. That's what we ought to be doing in these places called Alcoholics Anonymous. And in some of our places, we do it. Those little pockets of enthusiasm. When you walk into the meeting, there's something going on beneath the fellowship. The power underlying all of it, you can touch it. You just have to walk in. The same thing when you're around people like that. You want to be around them more. There's something going on below. We come to step two, this power. And first thing we approach step two with is my old belief systems about God, like me, like I did. The difficulty was always in with me. I would more than bristle with antagonism about this power called God. And at the beginning, they told me, power greater than myself, group of drunks for good orderly direction. I found some power in the numbers, found some safety in the numbers. I shared last night, if Joe had 30 years and Frank had 40 years, I'm going to sit between them because maybe it'll rub off. Right? Just had to be around that. That works for a little while, but then we need to move past that. And then my book does great stuff. I always shared this story. I was working with a guy. I was living in Staten Island. This one guy was from Brooklyn. Big, strappy guy. Tough kid. Did a lot of damage on the way in here. Street kid. And he asked me to sponsor him, and we stopped moving through the work. We got to step two, and I saw his whole deportment said to me, I can't do this. We're going to get to step two and talk about a little about God, chapter 18, agnostic. I explained what atheist was to him. I explained an agnostic. I explained what a believer was and someone in experience, and he got tight, just shut down. And we stopped moving through chapter 18, agnostics, on page 46. Second paragraph says, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself, I commenced to get results right then, even though I couldn't define or comprehend that power called God. Circumstances make me willing. I asked him that question. Are you willing? Yeah. Are you willing? Yes or no? Are you willing to grow towards this power? Are you willing to have an experience this power called God? Yes or no? Don't know what it's going to look like. I'm scared to death. But based on my first step experience, yeah, I'm willing. then we can move. The spiritual experience begins with a mustard seed of willingness. My spiritual experience, I thought, began in Alcoholics Anonymous when it began going through the work. After lots of reflection and meditation, looking back, my spiritual experience truly began in the back of a filthy hallway on the Lower East Side, coming off my last drunk in 1988, where I said, I'll do anything. I don't want this anymore. That was it. That's all it takes, a mustard seed of willingness. Next paragraph says, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. What a great piece of information, because I thought when you talked about God, it meant the God I grew up with, the God my grandparents gave me, the God my parents gave me, the God I witnessed working in others' lives. And the first thing I went to was, my mom was a drunk, she suffered, was humiliated, degraded, and finally takes her life. I don't want that God. That's a horrible God. And my book says you don't have to choose that conception. They're opening up the doors for us to walk through. See, most of us come from religious communities where, well, we're right and every other place is wrong. And while you're in here, you have to do it this way. In fact, do it a little bit more this way. And we get so wound up and tight, that's not freedom. You know. I'm a Catholic. And we have some of our religious holidays. And went to a restaurant and I was in the mood for a burger. And it was a day where you're not supposed to eat meat on this Friday, right? And someone said to me, you're not supposed to eat today. It's a sin. Do you really think God cares I'm eating a hamburger? Really. And I don't want to get into religious, because if that works for you, please, I'm just sharing my own experience. I don't want to break any traditions. But for me, my God's not interested in that stuff. I worship him in silence. I worship him in private. And I let him demonstrate his actions through me out here. I don't stand on the corner and tell everyone, see, I'm praying, ain't I a great AA? I don't do that. When we close for the Lord's Prayer, you'll rarely hear me saying the prayer. I'll just say it to myself, it's between me and God. I'll let him speak through me up here. Let him speak through me when I'm working with you. I love my God more than anything, and he knows that. It knows that. This power knows that. I'm not interested if I'm eating a burger or a tuna fish sandwich on a Friday. You know? Not if my God loves me unconditionally. And for me, I had to get unhooked from that old stuff. My own conception of God was a weight off my back. And I got permission deep down in here to use AA as a God. Group of drunks for good orderly direction. My old belief system said, how dare you? There's this God, only that God. Everyone else's God is wrong. This is the God. Can't use a group of drunk. My God says, go. That works for you. If that's going to bring you to me, do it. See, you're going to go up the hill this way. I'm going to go up the hill that way. She's going to go up the hill that way. God doesn't care. God just wants us, come to me. I'll be there. And he's going to show you how to come up and pull you when you're struggling and pull you when you're struggling. Some of us, he'll take us right out of it and place us there. Some who'll move through us. But we're going to get there because Father showed me how to get to you. And when we get there, this thing called alcoholism starts to dissolve. We're not taking up time at meetings talking about drama. My boss, my children, my wife, my this, my dog. And we spend 20 minutes at a meeting wasting time at an AA meeting when we should be talking about a solution and who can we help. Getting involved in drama. It's talking about God. You want to hear my drama? I got a half hour. Let's go. Here's my drama. This is how my day looked, and I'll take up a meeting. If I don't have drama, I'll listen to your drama. Let's talk about your drama. You don't have drama? Let's look at somebody. Let's invent drama. Let's have something. Right? Drama. Because it gives me this false sense of self. I got something that I can do and deflect from me. God forbid I should hold up a mirror to me, disregard you for a moment, and take stock of me. No, drama's better. So it says, much to our relief, we discovered I did not need to consider anyone else's conception of God. My own conception. Look at this promise. My own conception of God. It's like God knew how childlike we were, spoon-feeding us this. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. God doesn't make hard terms. It says, as soon as we admitted the possible existence, these are all words for God, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, I began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided I took other simple steps. There's a condition, a spiritual law here. So my book just told me my own conception, no matter how inadequate, group of junks, good orderly direction. Good enough. Let's go. I'm willing. Let's go. That was sufficient. It can't get simpler than that. It says, we found that God does not make too hard terms to those who seek him. That's why I don't try to live life on life's terms. That's difficult. I failed miserably with that. Living life on God's terms is simple. It's easy. My book tells me that. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It's open, we believe, to all men and women. Why would a loving God make this difficult? Those of us who have children or grandchildren, or nieces and nephews, would we, unless we wind up on the front page of the news one day for something really stupid, would we deny our children love and compassion when they need it? I think the carpenter said if our children were hungry, the cruelest man wouldn't give them a serpent or a rock to eat. Imagine what our Heavenly Father would do for us. Would God make this difficult? Here we are, sick and suffering. We're looking for a solution. We land in Alcoholics Anonymous, and God says, okay, we're going to make this really tough for you because I don't like you. I don't like what you did while you're out there. You know. Willing, you're on your way. And we, that willingness is almost a spiritual law. We need to get completely leveled, be rid of everything, the idea that one more I can handle. A book uses the word any reservations, lurking notion that I'll be immune to alcohol. That needs to go. And out of getting leveled, we get reborn. And we get to a place of willingness. And my book says, okay, now that you're willing, you're on your way. You'll immediately start to feel something going on. Sometimes I work with guys who are new or coming back after a long drunk, and I give them just a little bit of this book. And they call me back excited. Excited, as we all in this room ought to be, excited and passionate about what goes on in here. They're excited. They didn't even get to step three yet. They're excited because what's going on is the spirit's starting to wake up and they have some direction as to where they're going. They're not just wandering around in AA, throwing it on a wall, hope it sticks. How come our all-out meetings aren't like that? Why we've gotten so watered down and gobbled and we let Joe take up 20 minutes from the back talking about the tough day he had, or it's the summertime and I saw a beer and it was sweat and I wanted a drink. Take that to the diner. Talk to your sponsor about it. Or why we allow people to get to the podium and talk about everything but recovery to alcoholism. They give their qualification and then we go to a coffee break. How did you recover? And we roll over and let that stuff happen. Well, live and let live, that's being apathetic. Live and let live means something else. Right? So this guy who I was working with, I sit down, I read him, much to our relief, to the bottom of that page. I never forget this. This tough street kid, big guy, starts to weep in front of me. And it was killing him because he was showing tears. I knew he was coming from a school of real men don't cry. It was killing him that he was crying. But he was split in front of me. And he said something like this to me. I never thought I had a chance with God until I read this to him. See, he had to be shown. He was going around AA and no one showed him. I passed on what was given to me. I showed him. And he knew there was an opportunity, there was a shot for him to experience this power called God. My favorite chapter in the big book, next to A Vision for You. And then we began. And suddenly making that decision in step three and holding my hands and making that prayer on our knees wasn't such a tall order. Because he had something ignite in him for the first time in his life. And Bill says it melted the icy intellectual mountain. That's exactly what was going on with this guy. This guy was dissolving in front of me. Every manifestation of stuff was dissolving in front of me. And I was finally speaking to spirit. page 47, it says, when we talk to you about God, we mean your own conception of God. Then it says, do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking what they mean to you. At the start, this is all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we currently understand Him, where we are. Now, some of us have sponsors or we know some elders in AA who are enlightened, who are awake. Don't let that intimidate you. You know, I wish I can believe like Joe believes. Joe's so sure about God. I'm still kind of iffy. I'm willing, but I'm still kind of iffy. That's okay. Am I willing to grow towards that? Yes or no? So even though someone's really sure about God and you're not, that's okay. Am I willing? Yes or no? We will evolve. We will get to a place where we are sure about God as sure as we are of our own name. This is the great news this book offers. But it comes through not just showing up at a meeting. It comes through some drastic and revolutionary proposals. When I showed up to my sponsor's house, I was staying at a friend's house in Brooklyn, and he said to me, are you willing to have your whole life turned upside down? And I says, maybe he needs a sponsor and go through the work, not me. Well, let's rethink this. And with a handful of years sober, I said, well, whatever it takes, because based on my past experience with God and what has God done for me, if He's going to turn my life upside down, I know I'll land on my feet and it's going to be glorious, so let's go. I was scared to death. And off we went. And I haven't looked back. Drastic and revolutionary proposals of spiritual laws I need to live by and some directions I need to follow in Alcoholics Anonymous in this book. A few simple rules. My book is really clear. A few simple rules. They don't say a few simple suggestions. A few simple rules. Spiritual laws. And I found for me, the real alcoholic, I need to follow some few simple rules. But in that discipline, there's great freedom. And in the doing of this work, I succeed. A couple of questions they ask on page 47. Do I now believe where I currently am or even willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? Do I now believe, right? Yes, sponsor, I believe that there is God. I'm not sure, but I'm willing to believe in this power called God. We're off and running. Step one considerations. Touching step one will bring me to a place of saying, yeah, I believe, or I'm willing to believe. It's got to be better than what I was doing. As my sponsor would always say, you'd come to him with some drama and share about how things are going, and he would say, well, how's that working for you? Right? He just sit back and let you go and was all done. So how's that working for you? Well, not too good. Do you want what I got to offer? Right? Page 48 for a moment. It says, faced with alcoholic destruction, I soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as I tried to be on other questions. Experience in first step, circumstances make me willing to believe. Page 53, please. In the middle of the page, it says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, it wasn't because mommy didn't take me to school and daddy didn't take me to the little league. And, you know, I wanted long hair and my dad wanted me to have a crew cut and, you know, all my issues and triggers and my dysfunctional family and my enablers. Self-imposed crisis. Okay. I could not postpone or evade. I had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is everything or God is nothing. What's my choice to be? God's going to be everything. Eventually, no duality where it really is experiencing everything. But what's it going to be? Everything or nothing? Again, we go back and touch step one. Circumstances make me willing. And I'll just close up this chapter with this on page 55. Keep looking for God out there. Well, there is God out there, sure. We look at nature and things that are going on. We want to find a God personal to us. My book tells me we're on page 55. It says, actually, we're fooling ourselves. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental, the basic idea of God. It may be obscured. It may be blocked by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things. And those are the things that have got to get removed. Okay? But in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself.